I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but part of our continuing series with Clayton Rippey, artist Clayton Rippey, is our very special guest. Hey, Clayton, how are you?
Fine. Thanks, Frank.
I don't know if I have the pronunciation right, but I got Modigliani.
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 That's how you pronounce it.
All right. Well, there is an art auction going on, and this artist's work is expected to go for $150 million if it hasn't gone already. And this is a big deal. I don't know if it's a record for, I don't know how they judge it as a record. I mean, I'm sure there's been things that have gone for that much. But what do you know about this artist?
Not an awful lot. I've seen him in books and read a little bit about him. But most of the things that he did out of these fairly long faces and semi-abstract people that he painted, and he established a very definite, recognizable style, if you want to call it that. I think he was a very unusual painter. He stood out from the crowd by quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's, whatever reason, but there is a tremendous frenzy going on. It's a feeding frenzy to try to get this piece. Pretty amazing. And, you know, usually they don't lose on that. When somebody buys something like that for $150 million, very rarely does it go down. And, because it gets, I guess, the notoriety of being there, and maybe somebody who you beat out, it's worth something. By the way, if it goes up by a couple of million, it's still a profit. And, you know, I guess as long as it beats out the interest they have in whatever they had it in, it's a win-win. But what makes a piece like, I mean, this is just highly unusual, of course, but what makes a piece like this so valuable? And I know you don't know the piece, and I know we don't know all that much about the artist, but in general, why does a piece of artwork go that much?
Well, it could be a couple of things. The scarcity, I don't know how many things he did. He wasn't a really prolific painter, I don't think, because you didn't see that many of his things in magazines and books. But that might be part of it, whether he produced an enormous amount of work or not. Of course, on the other hand, Picasso and Klee have produced a voluminous work. And so they sort of shoot down that theory. But I would say if he didn't produce a lot of work and he became famous still, as a result of his individuality, then I think probably that would account for part of it. And, of course, he was a standout and a very different kind of artist in the things that he did. You could always, the minute you saw one, you knew who did it. And so part of that is the collectability of it.
Yeah, and let me just give a little bit more of a background here. This same piece was purchased by Steve Wynn. And, you know, you're from, at least part-time, from Vegas. A lot of us know Steve Wynn as the casino and hotel magnate. And
yeah, whoever advised him, or if he needed advice, he bought some very significant things. Yeah, well, he often exhibited at the one of the big hotels that had its own gallery, and he would bring his stuff in and show it here in Las Vegas quite often. So I had a chance to go to several of the exhibits that he had, and they were really good things that he bought.
Well, here's something. This is something he actually sold. He sold this back in 2003 for $26.9 million. And the buyer was a horse breeder, a billionaire named John Magnier. And I don't know, all that much about Magnier, but Steve Wynn sold this for 26.9. Now, it's not clear. I don't have, a clear example of what he purchased it for, but you have to believe he wouldn't have sold it if he was going to, you know, a guy like that is not going to sell it unless he sold it at a profit. He probably made a significant profit. But here's this guy.
I think $150 million, that could be a record. I'm not sure. I haven't heard the latest notes on some of these things, but they come up with a new sale about once or twice a year where some painting goes for more than anything that's been sold before, and this might be another one.
Yeah, well, there was another piece by this same artist, and again, the pronunciation on it is what?
Modigliani.
Modigliani.
Yeah.
A piece of his recently...
It's not spelled that way. It's M-O-D-I-G. Modigliani is what a lot of people call him, but the real pronunciation is Modigliani.
Yeah. So he had a piece recently go for $173 million, you know, the same artist. And,
wow.
And now this is expected to get more than $150. So it could, you know, far exceed everything that goes along with it. But if you think about it, Steve Wynn sold this piece for $26.9 million 15 years ago. The guy who bought it, now it's not clear whether he's the same person, the art collector who purchased it, that is selling it, but let's assume that he is. His profit is ridiculous. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. And
not bad.
No, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And I think it's good in general for the art community and, you know, and folks that have pieces that are $1 million or $2 million. But in general, anything like this has to be good for the community as a whole, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and if you have art pieces like that selling, then this ups the whoever buys it gives them a chance, and it also ups the value of what museums do, and the makes people aware of the tremendous worth of a good museum like the Museum of Modern Art, which has an enormous collection of contemporary art. And a place like the Getty Museum down here in Los Angeles, it just makes the museum more important to the public. And when a town, any big city, has a person who will risk money to build a museum, and the Getty, I think, was the groundbreaker in all that, and certainly the Museum of Modern Art and Whitney and a bunch of them. So that is a plus for the city. It's a very great attraction.
Yeah. Now, let me remind folks once again who you're listening to. Clayton Rippey is our very special guest and knows quite a bit about art. Over 9,000 pieces have come out of his hands and his mind and his heart over the years. And he's, I should say happy birthday. It should have been the first thing I said to you is happy birthday. As of April 24th, if my memory serves me, you turned 95 years young, and that's amazing. And in those 95 years, so much precious art has come out of his body, out of his mind, out of whatever. So congratulations. Anything special on your birthday? Anything special for your 95th?
Well, my son-in-law and daughter were here, and we had a nice dinner here at the house and celebrated them, and it was a very pleasant occasion.
Yeah, that's terrific. I have to imagine a lot of them run together. You know, I've had 51 birthdays, and, you know, I don't remember the first couple, I guess, but the ones I could remember kind of all blend together, and I guess a couple of them stand out more than the others, but as long as it's pleasant and not anything sad or painful, then it was a great birthday. And if you could spend it with loved ones, it's a it's extra special. So again, I'm sure all the listeners will join me in saying happy birthday to Clayton Rippey and many, many years to go. And again, I've asked you this question before, but it's important to really understand this. I think it is important for me and others to understand this. when you reach a milestone age like that, 95, or you get to a certain date or a birthday, are you retrospective? Are you introspective? Are you looking back at yourself or at the world around you and evaluating what it is or reevaluating what you've done? Or does it kind of just go by and, it doesn't add for reflection? I have to believe there's some reflection that's done at an important day like that, on your birthday at 95. Can you share with us if you had anything that you looked back on and just said, wow, you know? I mean, anything or just a normal day?
Well, the kids gave me a list of things that they go clear back to the time when they were children and that they remembered it. It was typed out about a 3-page list of stuff, and that just really helps to remember so many things that you don't come across all every day, or you don't think about every day, but it reminded me of all those things. It was a great list, and I'm putting it in with my super prized collection of treasures.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Again, Clayton Rippey is the voice that you're hearing. Just recently turned 95 years old, and a lot of artwork has come out of that, out of those hands and the mind. Like I said, let me jump back to the, if not the exact piece, the $150 million, what's expected to be $150 million, if not that, and not the $173 million that they sold, but the sale itself makes the artist more famous. So I'm sure when Steve Wynn sold it back then for $26.9 million, it makes headlines, right? It makes headlines, just like this one does, and it gets shown on TV, and it gets, gets print media, and people are talking about it. People send it around and everything else, and people are like, wow, sale, either for the seller's end or the buyer's end, and they have an opinion one way or the other about it. When it goes up again, and 15 years is a drop in the bucket when you're talking about this kind of money and this kind of sale, and it goes up again and starts getting press, and it's $150 million. I mean, this guy I'm sure he was on the map for a very long time, but this artist is now, with the ages, I mean, he is up there in the stratosphere, and it comes back to what you said originally. It's public relations, and it's PR, but it's PR because of what he sold for.
Yeah, well, I think the one that really set everybody on end a few years ago, and just sort of awakened this fact that you could get that much for a painting, was when Van Gogh's irises were bought by a Japanese businessman for $73 million, and that was the real record breaker at the time, and people just couldn't believe that a painting would sell for that much. But that, I mean, that's a normal going price these days for anybody of Van Gogh's stature. But back then, that was a real record breaker, and I think that pretty much was the trigger that started this whole thing of big prices for paintings.
Yeah, that one now is famous. Again, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
As the paintings grow scarcer and scarcer and become the possessions of collectors who really want to collect them and keep them, goes up, the price goes up, and the value of the paintings go up. And of course, a lot of the museums buy something and they just keep it, period. But there's a lot of trading goes on back and forth, and with that kind of money that the museums now have, they can afford to send shows out to other smaller museums all the way across the country. So everybody benefits from a really big museum and an expensive collection, and they can be trusted to borrow paintings from each other and from collectors and send them around all over the country for people to see. So collections that people might have to travel to the big cities to see are coming to their smaller towns, and they're traveling around. So that's a great benefit to the public.
Yeah. What would have to happen? And again, forget about those numbers per se. I mean, those are astronomical numbers. We're not talking about that. But what would have to happen for an artist, you know, say like yourself, but not even your status, but just, let's stick with you, right? I mean, your pieces can go for thousands of dollars. But what would it do? What would have to happen for a living artist to see his or her artwork jump to let's say from a couple of thousand to 20,000 or to 30,000? It's public relations, right? It would be somebody buying it, somebody prominently buying it, somebody doing a piece on it. I mean, what has to be done in order for art to jump 10 times the amount or 5 times the amount, whatever. What?
Well, I think probably somebody, some collector just likes it and buys it. Or a museum finds something that they like that the artist has done, and they buy it and it gets publicity. I think that's probably what does it for the public to realize, hey, this guy's stuff is worth a lot more than we thought. And so I think there are, all across the country, there are tremendous artists who will never ever be heard of it, or even they show a few things in here and there in museums, and they take some prizes. And I see a lot of auctions going on, and they write up auctions in magazines, and they estimate the price, sale prices of some of the things, and they're getting up there in 40 and 50 and 150 and 200,000. But it's not clear up in the millions yet. But a lot of these artists today are having reasonable success in their sell of their stuff because people are buying.
If you and just yeah,
there's more people with the money to buy, be able to buy too.
Well, again, for those just joining us or just turning on their radios, their computers, Frank McKay here with artist Clayton Rippey, and we're talking about the world of art. What else? Would we be talking about with a wonderful artist? And you'll soon be able to see a documentary in his own words, and you'll see him speaking it, and you'll get to see so much of his artwork, beautiful artwork, all in one fell swoop, all in one nutshell. In a nutshell, you'll be able to see his life and hear him. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, Clayton Rippey is our very special guest. Clayton, you said if some art lover, famous art lover, purchased your artwork or someone's artwork, it could jump up in stature and jump up in price. Do they have to purchase it? What if somebody made a gift of it? What if somebody said, I'm trying to think of a prominent name. What if Warren Buffett? Warren Buffett has a piece of Clayton Rippey or John Doe or whoever, or for that Michael Bloomberg, somebody I know fairly well. He picks up a piece, and it gets out there. Does it matter whether he bought it or not? Does it matter whether that person, whoever he or she may be, spent money on it? Obviously, I guess it would be better, and it would be better if there was a nice price tag attached to it. My question is, does it matter? As long as they're in possession of it, they own your artwork. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it does. The more good things that happen to an art piece, the better it, the more people come to respect that art piece as something that is reflecting the opinions of the people who buy it or collect it. And the places they collected, like various museums and so on. If an artist has a half a dozen paintings in the collection of the Whitney Museum, for example, that's a real star. And so people are going to see it. And when once things get collected, like particularly by big galleries, they are seen by thousands of people who visit the galleries.
Let me again remind everyone, we got about a minute left, in this segment with Clayton Rippey. Clayton, do we have you for a second segment today?
Okay.
Clayton Rippey, wonderful artist, master artist, and he's based out of Utah / Las Vegas, kind of goes back and forth with his wonderful wife Libby, and just a wonderful part of the country to use as the backdrop for everything that's going on in his paintings and so much more. Clayton, final word. Again, happy birthday. But a final quick word. We got about a minute left in this segment.
Yes.
Anything to leave us with? Thoughts? You have 95 years of wisdom. Just a quick little thought for us to kind of leave on.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that painting is selling for so much, and then more power to the auctioneers and the people that put it up and the people that collect such things.
Yeah.
Or have the ability to collect, the financial ability and the good belief in what's being done by artists in the world. I think that's good for them.
Yeah, well, I agree, and you know, I appreciate the thought and the wisdom on here. I gotta just add, I've gotta believe it's good for the community. I gotta believe it's good for all artists when something goes for that much. Clayton Rippey, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in. Soon we'll be able to tell you where to see a film on Clayton, and proud to be part of that. But also, we encourage everyone to binge listen. You can find us on so many different spots, including SoundCloud, go there and binge listen. It doesn't have to be in any particular order. We're not going in any particular order, but a series with this artist, and you'll get to really see the inside of his thoughts and his talent. Frank McKay signing off. Clayton Rippey has been our very special guest. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.